I would say, earlier this year, right, pre kind of COVID-19 lockdown was when we started to really see some meaningful adoption, and then kind of throughout the year here, it's started to take off.
This is another episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. My guest today is Dan Burkoff from NAMI. And I probably said both those things wrong, but hopefully I got them right.
Exactly right.
Perfect. And Dan is the co-founder of NAMI, which is an interesting platform that, well, I'll let you describe it. Maybe tell us, what is NAMI?
Yeah, absolutely. So in a nutshell, we're helping companies, large and small, take their products, whether it's a mobile application or a digital product that's fulfilled either through an app or on the web, and help them monetize through subscriptions. And the key reason that we're building NAMI is that as folks have moved towards the subscription model, in a lot of reason because Apple and Google, as very large sources of acquiring paid customers in the kind of mobile first world, they've been encouraging the move to subscriptions. And so app publishers and digital product companies have been going that direction as well. And subscriptions are very different from other types of product. Monetizing that way is very different. There's a life cycle that the user goes through from, coming in the front door from an acquisition perspective. And then, do they get a free trial? And what happens after the free trial is over? And then, they're renewing. And it gets very complex because especially as folks build these products that kind of grow up, so to speak, so what larger enterprises are publishing, is that you're not just selling in one place. You're selling on the web, direct, perhaps. You're selling through the App Store, Google Play, maybe through Roku, if you're a streaming service. And it gets quite complicated from a technical perspective. And so the issue is folks spend a lot of time kind of building technical plumbing instead of either building the tools or buying the tools like we provide to figure out how to market effectively subscription products. So, like I said earlier, if somebody's about to run out of their free trial, but they've indicated they want to cancel or they're not going to renew, what marketing campaign might you put in front of that user to try to maybe you extend the trial? And tooling to do that kind of thing in this kind of mobile first world really doesn't exist. So that's what we're trying to fill.
Very interesting. So I guess first off, like, what motivated you to start this company and build this platform? What was the problem that you solved, and what was your circumstance at the time?
Yeah. So my co-founder and I so I've been in the mobile space really since the advent of the iPhone. The launch of the App Store. I built an agency that was responsible, still exists. It's owned by WPP, called Wunderman Thompson, Wunderman Thompson Mobile, that's responsible for building some of the really most high-end kind of premium consumer digital mobile apps. And so we learned a lot in that. And then I started with my current co-founder, a company called Push.io, which was one of the early pioneers in the push notification world. And so, when we started, people didn't even know what a push notification was.
Right. And I remember your company. I didn't know that was you.
Talk to anybody on the street now and you say push notification, they give you a dirty look. Because it's over the top now. As a user, in the early days, we were, at pioneering things like breaking news alerts and sports scores, things that people really wanted versus, cute digital coupons and some of these promotional notifications that folks get today. What happened is that that company ended up getting acquired. Joe and I ended up inside of Oracle at the Oracle Marketing Cloud, where we took our Push.io technology and engine and built the first generation of Oracle's mobile marketing offering. And the thing that we noticed was that both being inside of a larger marketing kind of system, but also focused on mobile marketing, is that there are some really fantastic tools around marketing e-commerce products, or marketing, you know, in the context of like a B2B cloud service, or even marketing automation from kind of a B2B sales perspective. And really great tools, really great capabilities, quite mature in some cases, but there's nothing out there that's tailor-made for subscriptions. And so as we started to see this shift towards subscriptions in the kind of app economy, it just seemed unfortunate that marketing teams are now in charge of this kind of new domain, didn't have tools that felt familiar to them with capabilities like, you know, being able to do A/B testing or, you know, design the CTA in the cloud so that they didn't have to wait for a development team to go implement something, or have the right analytics so they understand, hey, you know, we're spending this much on acquisition, but the subscription LTV is this other number, and those things are out of balance. And so we need to, you know, make sure we're spending the right money on acquisition. So that whole kind of range of tools that you'd expect in any one of these other areas that didn't exist in subscription seemed like it needed to, and still, quite frankly, needs to exist in subscriptions. We're only just getting started. So I think there's more work to do, but the market certainly needs it.
So you hit on a lot of interesting points. So the idea is, if I'm an entrepreneur or an existing business, I'm looking to monetize any of these digital products, right? Because we encourage people to say, look, build a digital product and then automate marketing, sales, support. And it sounds like where this plays is, first off, when I'm at the development phase and I want to think of what's my business or revenue model, right? And so the people that would be adopting this would be obviously mobile based applications, but also you mentioned Roku, which is interesting. So who are you seeing adopting this, I guess, first off?
Really mobile first. So if you know you need to be on the App Store, if you know you need to be on Google Play, and beyond that, where Roku comes in is that, so there's different categories that we see quite a lot of adoption. Really, it's across the board outside of, I would say gaming is the one area that's a little bit less so, in part because you see some services like, you know, Apple Arcade, and then what, you know, Steam and some of these services where the app publisher themselves or the game publisher themselves are kind of part of a bundle versus offering the subscription direct. I actually think that games will start to move that way, but they're not there yet. The free plus kind of Coinbase model is still pretty predominant out there, or a paid download. But outside of games, I mean, when you look at, you know, things like health and fitness, all these fitness services where you can work out from home with a, you know, low monthly fee subscription, to weather apps, to, you know, productivity tools like, you know, DocuSign or HelloSign or some of these kinds of applications that most of us would think about those and say, oh, well, they're, you know, I log into the web and that's how I access DocuSign. Well, you can actually buy DocuSign for signatures through their mobile app and that pay them through the App Store as a recurring subscription. And that's part of, you know, I don't know all the ins and outs of what's going on there, but I would presume it's because they figured out there's a different market segment they're able to acquire through the App Store that they're not acquiring if they were only selling direct. So that's and then other categories like in streaming services, you know, we work, and that's where the Roku and some of the OTT platforms come in. We work with some folks in the streaming space, media companies, where they kind of have to be everywhere. And in fact, one of our customers, large kind of Fortune 100 media company, they're on something like, I think, 18 platforms, including game consoles, including smart TVs.
Right, that makes sense.
You know, so they're just sort of everywhere, and they need to be able to sell everywhere. So you kind of quickly see how just the technical side of transacting all those different places and kind of having a unified view, that's really, really challenging, let alone wanting to be able to move the needle on your business.
Super interesting. Okay. And it's a very unique platform. So I'm probably could geek out on that all day. So what was your, on the startup side, like you're a couple years into this now, I think, right?
Yeah. So we started in, basically summer of 2018, Kind of did a soft launch a year later at Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference in 2019. I would say, you know, earlier this year, right, pre kind of COVID-19 lockdown was when we started to really see some you know meaningful adoption, and then kind of throughout the year here it started to take off. So you know, in spite of the global situation, I think that's in part because some of these categories, like I mentioned, like health and fitness, where not only are there a bunch of services, but then there's new services all the time trying to come into the market because all of a sudden people can't go to their gym necessarily, or they can't, you know, they're at home, so they're binging more content. And so maybe they used to just have Netflix, but now they're adding other subscriptions to their world because they've got, you know, time at home on their hands.
Yeah, I can see where that whole category of like fitness itself, you know, where you're trying to capture your own app customer with a subscription, no physical location, totally makes sense for your platform to adopt. That's really interesting. Or for someone to adopt your platform to put, to like power that whole experience, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Super interesting. And then what was your timeline, or what was your process for like kind of validating that, hey, there's a need for this out there? Like, did you build something? Did you go talk to customers?
Yeah, so part of the benefit of being in the mobile world for a while, both with the two companies, the agency that I founded, the Push service, and then inside of Oracle, was that we had a lot of exposure to a lot of different categories and types of publishers, you know, just getting started, or you know, at scale. And so we had a hunch there was something there. As we, you know, a little secret to my success in the past has always been to kind of watch what Apple's doing and forecasting ahead. You know, if they start to talk about certain things, even if it's not a kind of, you know, hallmark feature of their product, just the fact that it even gets room in the keynote usually is a clue that that's something that's rising in importance. And so I started seeing that Apple was talking about subscription more on their earnings call. They were talking about services revenue more for their own business. And so that was an important signal to me of where at least Apple was going. And, you know, Apple's not the entire of the market, but they definitely drive a lot of digital product companies' innovation. So You might start out and ship on Apple first, and then you add on those other 17 platforms you might add over time. But you're certainly going to be on Apple within the first, you know, one or two that you choose to go to first. And so it kind of establishes a pattern. And so that was there. And then early on, we, you know, sort of in the first 6 months, Joe and I, my co-founder, we basically just did a roadshow with our past customers and gave them just like the earliest possible look, solicited their feedback, and took that back. And what that did was really give us confidence that there was something here. We, you know, I would say it was not nailed yet, because even for some of these folks that we had worked with in large organizations and small organizations, subscriptions was still new for them. So it's not like they just said, hey guys, here's the 20 things we need in a product, and if you go do that, you know, it's a killer. But our experience, especially inside the marketing cloud, of again, kind of taking the idea of like, what are just marketing teams in general used to having from a capability perspective? And what if we just took those exact same set of capabilities and applied them to this kind of new frontier, new approach to monetization? It gave us a pretty confident roadmap around, you know, what we need to start chipping away at. And then it's just like everything, you know, how do you prioritize, and you know, finite resources, how do you kind of choose what's next? And, you know, we've just tried to be as customer driven as possible. So if somebody's asking for something, you know, that gets a vote perhaps over something that we want to do next, but that nobody's yet asking us for. That's a constant balancing act, but and it's never just only customer driven, because I feel like part of our opportunity and obligation is to help educate our customers and prospective customers about something that they about, that they're going to have these needs. So one of the things that I see a lot is that There's a new service that gets announced in a press release, and it's going to launch on Apple platforms and Google platforms, and it's going to be this price point, and here's the date that it's going to be released. And you start to talk, and we've had the occasion to be able to talk to some of those companies before they've launched, and you can just see all the energy they're expending just to get to that moment of release where it's shipped. And you can also see that they're spending almost zero time thinking about what happens on day one after launch. And so they're not making the investments that they need to be making to be able to do the things they're going to want to do on day one. When now attention has to turn to results. And well, have you established the right foundations to be able to move efficiently, iterate quickly, optimize, or are you going to be bogged down in more technical cycles? And time again, we see that, you know, day one, we're back in technical cycles, and they're there for a long, long time because it was all just about getting to launch.
Interesting. What's the future of Nami?
Well, we've got, I mean, the future is long, hopefully.
Always.
You know, we have ambitions in terms of various platforms that we want to go to, various integrations we want to do. But there's also something else, which is that, I mean, I recruited our CTO, Alejandro Cantarero, from the LA Times, where he ran their data group and their digital marketing group. Alejandro is a PhD with experience in machine learning at scale in production. You know, he's used data to really drive revenue using sophisticated models at places like the LA Times and Tribune Publishing before that. And so kind of our vision for the company overall is that, you know, there's certain blocking and tackling capabilities that we need to have in the product. But from day one, we've been building it with two fundamental kind of foundation elements for us that we believe will pay off over time. And we just have to kind of keep going and to hopefully have that payoff. And those two things are number one, we've been building a methodology to machine learning that's integrated into every aspect of our product. And so today, that doesn't mean that all over the product, there's all these smart algorithms being used, but we've set a foundation where we can start to productize these algorithms into things that will hopefully make the marketer, the marketing team, and the revenue owner's job much easier to kind of get to some of these optimizations on results. So that's number one. But number two, which is maybe even more profound, is that, you know, working inside of the marketing cloud and kind of seeing how the sausage is made, you know, we have a pretty strong opinion around what the future needs to look like from a end user privacy perspective. So we've been trying to build the technology and the company around this idea that we don't want to close off opportunities for our customers to affect change and drive results, but in addition, we don't want to necessarily have all this crazy data where, you know, we know these things about our customer's customer that we'd really prefer not to know. And so it's interesting because from just a architecture perspective, it means that we have to do sometimes more work to arrive at a solution to stand up to our privacy promise and guarantee that we're making, because it's what we believe in is the right thing to do, we think, even if it's more work, more resources that we have to dedicate to solving a problem that would be easier to solve if we perhaps had just collected whatever we could in service of shipping that. So, you know, back to your where is Nami? I mean, I hope that over time we've been able to make some of these ML capabilities really accessible to our customers and help them really level up, kind of step change improvement to their results in these subscription businesses, but also that we've been able to practice what we preach over time around this end user privacy promise without closing off capabilities for our customers.
Terrific. Lots of opportunity. Sounds like going in the future. All right, I'm going to wrap with a couple quick things. First off, thank you, first of all, for spending time with me and sharing the story of NAMI. And hopefully, this is an opportunity for you to connect with some new marketing departments and product development. First off, is if you could recommend only one book to people in the world that they read, what would that book be?
Oh man, that's always the tough question because it depends on the moment, right? Since I just talked about data, the one book I would recommend, I'll just grab it here, it's somewhere. Well, maybe it's not so fresh, but there's a great book. Oh yeah, there's a great book on.
We actually get to see the book, so that's even better. Look at that.
Got
to
see the book. get it. It's not where I expected it to be, but it's this book about. I'll send it to you after, and you can
no worries.
Drop it in the script. But it is it's about kind of. It's talking about kind of the destructive and some of the confirmation biases around data, and some of the hard problems to solve around that. That's kind of a technical, esoteric book. I would say on the kind of, beyond that, I'm a big fan of a book called That Dichotomy of Leadership by Jocko Willink. And, as we try to, we're a little tiny startup, but as we scale up and have more team members and we're trying to be efficient and kind of operate, with a great, kind of efficiency and, but where people are responsible for their departments and their deliverables, we're always just trying to think about, well, how can like basically everybody in the company be a leader, right? Instead of having this top down kind of methodology. So that's a pretty good book.
I love that book. It's a great answer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shout out to Jocko Willink. He's on my dream 100 somewhere, maybe top 10.
Yeah.
That we meet at some point.
he's got an interesting podcast too, but,
excellent podcast. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's definitely different. How are you, Dan, changing the world?
Oh man. I mean,
or NAMI.
Yeah, we're not solving. We talk about this sometimes. We're not solving cancer or trying to send rockets to Mars, but we have this idea in our company called BCE, and what BCE stands for is best company ever. And it's not a specific set of thou must do this, thou must do that. It's not even a set of specific core values. It's really just a kind of a way to operate. And kind of where we got this was as we were having our company acquired, the last go around, CEO of that company, who's now the head of DocuSign, he wrote down this acronym on the whiteboard, BCE, and said, "Does anybody know what that means?" And he explained it in this kind of whole philosophy, but the thing that in that company was really focused on email marketing, which is not the sexiest concept in the world or the sexiest thing in the world. But as we would visit the offices before we decided to do the deal, there was just this feeling everywhere you went that every single person in the company felt like this was the best job they had ever had up to that point in their career. And then even now, looking back, you talk to some of those same folks and they continue to see it as kind of that marker in their career that was just a great time.
That's interesting.
And so for us, we want to be a BCE for our team. And it doesn't mean we're the best company ever. It means we're a best company ever. And part of their kind of career development, we hope to build an experience that they'll be very fond of, learn a lot from, enjoy the hell out of the time, and something that we can all be proud of. So that's what we're trying to do, and hopefully I think it's one of the reasons we've been able to be successful with recruiting some of the folks we've been able to recruit as well.
That's amazing. I like that concept. How do people get in touch with you, and what's the best way to reach out?
Yeah, so lots of ways. Our website's NAMIML. The ML stands for machine learning. NAMIML.com. My email is my first name, last name, dan.burkaw@namiml.com. Folks can easily just shoot me an email. But I'm also on all the, you know, all the different channels. I'm on LinkedIn, Twitter. You can just usually my handle is just my last name. So when you have an unusual last name, you get to just own that space on the internet forever. And
I may resemble that.
Yeah.
Final thing is, when we have interesting people on the podcast, we'd like you to nominate other interesting people that you can introduce us to. Typically, we talk to experts or entrepreneurs and sometimes even authors. So who would you, Dan, like to nominate as a future guest of Automate and Grow?
Excellent question. I would nominate this gentleman named Ty Braswell. And, you know, Ty is a, I don't know if you want me to go into details about who Ty is.
You can tell me who he is. Yeah, I don't know who he is.
So. Yeah. Ty is, he's had an eclectic career. He was in the music industry as a record exec and worked with, all these famous bands. And then he transitioned at one point in his career to being a sort of digital consultant on the forefront of mobile. I met him when he was helping the National Hockey League build their first generation of NHL mobile.
Oh, wow.
And my company won the contract at the time. And he's just one of the most interesting people that's seen these different kind of shifts in different industries. He's got some great stories about how Sony, he was at Sony for a time, and how they tried to compete with Apple iTunes, and he never wants to ever compete with Apple again because that was not a great experience.
Sony's an interesting story itself. But I don't know if you know, but my side hustle is I'm a scout in the Canadian Hockey League for the Everett Silvertips. So
awesome.
Long time, different roles in hockey. So I'm excited to talk to him. Dan, I want to acknowledge you for the work that you're doing, and thank you for spending time with me today. And we will wrap this up by saying thank you for joining us on Automate and Grow. And we hope to see you on a future episode of Automate Grow, hopefully with Ty Braswell, who that would be actually a very interesting guest. See you on a future episode of Automate and Grow.